Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. And we start with the good. This actually happened Friday on, what is it, Real Time with Bill Maher, his HBO show, where he gets a full round table of far leftists and then throws in the occasional conservative. There wasn't really one on this episode, but there have been in the past, including National Review's own Charlie Cook a couple of weeks ago. But the issue at hand, as part of this panel discussion, which included Minnesota Congressman Keith Ellison, as well as Sheila Bair, I think she's the former head of the FDIC. She claims she's a Republican. The issue came up that Bill Maher thinks that Democrats aren't tough enough when it comes to pushing for gun control. He pointed out that Mitch McConnell did not get a lot of blowback from Democrats for holding up his rifle at CPAC a couple of weeks ago. And here's how that whole conversation went down.
The problem is the Democrats love guns, too. Now, when Mitch McConnell did that and held the gun up, here's what his opponent, the Democrat, tweeted. She said, "Someone tell Team Mitch that's not the way to hold a gun." Kentucky, there she is. Kentucky women do it better. See, that's the problem, is the Democrats are just as bad.
I don't think that's the problem. That's not
really
the, no,
it's
I
problem
don't.
With me.
Well, I'm a Republican. I'm for gun control. I just want to be
I'm for gun control too. Well, let me just say, I'm for gun control, but I don't think you have got to you've got to eliminate ownership of all guns in order to get some common sense.
No, you don't.
Gun rules. I mean, 27 children were mowed down. Isn't that enough for us? One of our own colleagues, Gabby Gifford,
then
shot
why
in the
doesn't
face.
Your party come out against the Second Amendment?
Bill, I
sure wish they would come out against the Second Amendment. Now, he went on to say that the Progressive Caucus has a lot of quote-unquote common sense safety measures that would make a lot of conservatives nauseous, Jim. So I'm not sure he's for a complete firearm ban, but the idea that he didn't blanch in the face of, hey, the problem is the Second Amendment, could be good fodder for Republicans if more Democrats take that tone.
This is one of those rare moments where I am in absolute total agreement with Bill Maher, not his viewpoint on guns, but in that monologue or his rant there, he's lamenting the fact when he says Democrats are every bit as bad on guns from his perspective as Republicans are. Toomey Manchin, that background check bill, didn't pass because there were enough Democrats who wouldn't vote for it. You can argue about Republicans are the bad guys, Republicans are crazy, but there are enough Democrats. And he points out why did Allison Lundgren Grimes take that, you're not holding it right, Senator, approach? Because if she said, Mitch McConnell, you shouldn't be holding a gun and no gun should be in this country unless it's in the hands of military or police, she'd get, 30% if she's lucky in Kentucky. Bill Maher has his finger on the problem and basically is lamenting that the Democrats won't come out and take his preferred viewpoint, which is that the Second Amendment shouldn't exist, that there should not be a private ownership right to firearms. And so I wish Democrats would do the same. Yes, obviously it'd be very good for them, but I also think it would be a clarifying moment, shall we say, that ultimately we, the Second Amendment fans, basically believe that if you load up a gun control advocate with booze or sodium pentothal or truth serum or something like that, that they'd ultimately say, yeah, nobody should have a gun. And, that's why we don't trust them when they say, oh, it's piecemeal. When you ask them, what is your stance on guns? They'll say, well, I don't want to ban all guns. I believe in hunting or some sort of nonsense like this. And, folks like me will point out the Second Amendment doesn't say a darn thing about hunting. It talks about the right of, the right of the people shall not be infringed because it was important for the people to have themselves armed against, heaven forbid, the U.S. government ever became authoritarian or despotic and things like that. You can argue with that. You can say it's an unrealistic worry, post-IRS scandal, post-NSA scandal. But if you want to do that, you have to change the Constitution. You have to take out that amendment. Liberals and Democrats don't want to do that because it's hard. And so what they really want to do is kind of this backdoor, well, we'll try to do it by a million regulations. We'll try to do it at the local level like they had in the D.C. for a while. We'll have really long waiting periods. We'll have really complicated and extensive permitting processes. They want to have a de facto ban without having an actual ban because they know an actual ban would never pass constitutional muster. What we've seen in the Heller decision and other places is that actually, the de facto bans don't pass constitutional muster either. Please, Democrats, listen to Bill Maher, because if nothing else, he is honest about what his ultimate policy goal is. And that's something you can't say for almost anybody else involved in the gun control movement.
On to the bad martini now. And of course, right at the end of the George W. Bush administration and into the early days of the Obama administration, there was the bailout of the auto industry. And this coming from today's campaign spot, courtesy of one Jim Garrity. The taxpayer loss in the GM bailout is $10.5 billion. The Treasury Department said it recovered $39 billion from selling its GM stake and had put $49.5 billion of taxpayer money directly into the GM bailout. The news today, it was nearly 5 years ago that any doubts were laid to rest among engineers at General Motors about a dangerous and faulty ignition switch. At a meeting on May 15, 2009, they learned that data in the black boxes of Chevrolet Cobalts confirmed a potentially fatal defect existed in hundreds of thousands of cars. But in the months and years that followed, as a trove of internal documents and studies mounted, GM told the families of accident victims and other customers that it did not have enough evidence of any defect in their cars. Interviews, letters, and legal documents show. Last month, GM recalled 1.6 million Cobalts and other small cars, saying that if the switch was bumped or weighed down, it could shut off the engine's power and disable airbags. Overall, since then, 23 fatal crashes, resulting in 26 deaths. And so, Jim, this is, I guess, what our tax dollars to some extent have paid for, although I'm not sure you can put a lot of blame at the feet of the administration unless they knew about it, too.
Oh, let me, let's begin with this, Greg. If you're a listener and you have a Chevy Cobalt, get it back to the dealer. Maybe have it towed to the dealer since you don't want to have any incidents, while you're driving it back to the dealer to have it checked. Best case scenario, this is abominable behavior on the part of GM when they were accepting billions upon billions of dollars in taxpayer money. And so in that case, you just want to see everybody at the top of GM, prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, because really, you're selling unsafe products and then turning around and asking government for help and not mentioning that. It'd be really interesting to see if the government could sue to get the remainder of that money back, because by golly, this is basically fraud going on. Basically, you've got this giant issue, giant potential liability, and not disclosing it to the person who's coming in to give you money to bail you out. But then, as you mentioned, did the government know about it? Eric Holder was asked about, whether there's any possibility that government ownership had an impact on the regulatory response to the ignition switch problems. And he said, well, I'm not sure that is necessarily true. That's not reassuring. That's not the answer you want. The answer you're looking for is hell no. The people at the very beginning, remember when, the Transportation Safety Administration went after some of the Japanese car companies, and people were saying, wait a minute, the government now owns GM, and it has regulatory authority and police power over GM's competitors. How do we know that what the government is doing is in the best interest of the public or in the best interest of GM? This is why you don't want big companies and big government getting into bed together, because they end up being indistinguishable about whose interest is whose. You kind of wonder, if you're one of those 29 victims, you got to be wondering, can the federal government be liable for some portion of this? Can can anyone, find or prove that the government's response to this major safety issue was impacted or mitigated in any way by their ownership of GM? And it's not yet proven, but the answer from Holder wasn't exactly reassuring. And I think you have to start wondering about that. If, as I said, the best case scenario is that GM is being run by a bunch of heartless bastards who have no problem selling an unsafe car for years and years and years, and then taking taxpayer dollars to do it. There are a lot of Americans who are very, very wary about the bailout of the automakers, and this is a giant vindication of them, that our tax money was used to sell unsafe vehicles, and now 29 people are dead as a result of that.
On to the crazy martini now, and this is also courtesy of the campaign spot. Jim, it's been said for a number of weeks and possibly even a couple of months now that Democrats don't have the highest hopes of regaining the House of Representatives, regaining the majority there. And you, I think, have found a lower key example of the fact that they're not expecting to win back the House. And that's because MyDemocraticStore.com, the official store of the Democrats' 2014 campaign, paid for by the DCCC, that's the group that's designed to win House races, it has not been updated since the holidays. So if you go there now, you can still get your I Love Obamacare bumper sticker and your, of course, Happy Holidays mug. There would never be a Merry Christmas mug there, or your Stand Up for Medicare magnet. So is this a telltale sign to you that the Democrats have pretty much given up on the House?
I discovered this late yesterday. I came to the realization, Greg, that I may be the first person to look at MyDemocraticStore.com in about 3 months. And I did this simply because I remember, getting a easy piece making fun of the things that were for sale there. I mean, most people's reaction to the story was not, oh, my God, I can't believe it hasn't been updated in 3 months. It was more like, wait, really? The DCCC has a gift shop? And yes, they do. And is where you can get all of your, you know, True Blue caps and all kinds of stuff like that. The I Heart Obamacare sticker. I haven't seen a lot of those on the road lately. I don't know why. You know, they might be having some sort of problems with it. Maybe if you do that, somebody who had their insurance canceled might try to run you off the road or something like that, rear-end you in the parking lot or something. But then the next one, which really stuck in my craw, was the, you know, Stand Up for Medicare. Now, we're used to Democrats running Medicare campaigns and, you know, in elections going back for as long as we can remember. But as I've been beating the drum on the campaign spot, the Obama administration, Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, is cutting Medicare. They are cutting the payments for home health care services, and not by a little bit, 3.5% this year. And they've pledged they're going to do the same thing for the next 3 years. And if you run a home health care industry, which is where, you know, some nurse or registered practitioner comes along and checks on you at home and makes sure you're doing okay, it's usually for the elderly. You know, they might give you, you know, physical therapy, speech therapy, stuff like that. The government's saying, well, look, we're going to pay less for it. You, the company providing it, you just got to deal with it. So it means smaller margins, and in some cases, some companies are saying they're going to have to close doors over this or lay off staff. All of the Medicare campaigns have made clear that cutting Medicare is the worst thing in the whole wide world. Paul Ryan got the ad of him pushing Granny off a cliff for proposing a budget that might do it someday. Now, here's Sebelius actually doing it. These are not theoretical cuts. These are not proposed cuts. These are cuts that have actually gone into impact. And yet Democrats are still selling these Stand Up for Medicare stickers. So I guess maybe at the bottom you can add, you know, Stand Up for Medicare, elect Republicans. Then it would be more accurate than what they're selling right now.
Yeah, I hope they do try to really push publicly the I Love Obamacare bumper stickers. That would work perfectly into the...
goes well with the Repeal the Second Amendment campaign.
Yes, it does. I'm sure that'll really get everybody out to the polls on their behalf. It would get everybody out to the polls, just not the way they want to. So that could be a good martini if they do that. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.